Good morning. So last time we had a normal lecture, we covered set associative caches, which were the subject of the re-lab that you may have started yesterday, or finished yesterday, and don't have to do something after the break. And the idea of set associative caches is that we extend things. I have this in. Let's see. We extend our direct map caches to have multiple blocks per row, kind of like stapling a bunch of them together. And for the most part, it just works like a direct map cache does, except that we have to check multiple places for a match versus just one place for a possible match, a match being a hit in our cache. Now, one thing that was different is that we have to deal with replacement policies. When we want to put something in the cache, we have to decide what to replace. And with the direct map cache, we didn't have to make a choice because there was only one place to put things that made our decision for us. With the set associative cache, we have multiple places we could place a value. We need to decide between them. The most common policy is this least recently used policy, or some approximation of least recently used. We mentioned that, you know, tracking this sort of exactly is feasible with like two or three ways. It's not really feasible. Well, it is feasible, it's not economical with more ways. And one note about how this works is that we kind of need to update our tracking information on hits. So normally with a plain old direct map cache on a hit, we're not changing anything in the cache. The cache state stays the same. We have an LRU policy. This isn't always true because we need to remember that, oh, we just accessed this part, this block, so we know not to replace it if possible later. And when we have more than two ways, we actually need to track the actual order of accesses because, you know, let's say we have everything accessing set index 7, and we have, say, four blocks in there. If we have four misses in a row, we need to say, what does the first miss replace? What does the second miss replace? What does the third miss replace? What does the fourth miss replace? And if we're actually implementing the least recently used policy, that should go in order from the least recently accessed block in index 7 to the most as of the start of the pattern. And we mentioned because that tracking is kind of annoying, real processors with lots of ways often use some approximation of that. Then we started talking about kind of thinking about how our cache accesses relate to our code. And one issue that came up quickly is about alignment. So we can have values that take up multiple bytes. And that means that we can have one value that we read or write that's actually stored in multiple cache blocks. And this is expensive because we have to do two accesses to get one value. And if we say have 64-byte cache blocks and we have an 8-byte value split across those two blocks, we're accessing 128 bytes to change 8 bytes. Not great. And compilers try to avoid this by trying to do what we call align values, typically by making the address of the value be a multiple of its size. And this prevents values from going across cache blocks when it's not necessary. Now, but they don't like do this like such that like we start every array at the beginning of a cache block, even though we're doing that for our examples with arrays, because, well, you know, it wastes space. We have 64-byte cache blocks, and I decide every array starts at byte 0 of a cache block. That means I'm potentially adding, you know, 32-ish bytes of padding over and over again for every array you declare on the stack. Probably you wouldn't be happy if your compiler did that to you. And we'll continue more about relating cache misses to C code today. We started with some exercises last time. Questions about things we covered last time?
Yeah.
Okay. So some logistics. So as I mentioned, the cash lab is due after the break now. So we'll probably do some, I should have proofread this that I wrote it this morning. Oh, I did write the right thing. We'll do some extra exercises in the 9 a.m. lecture versus the 12 p.m. lecture because we need to get them in sync. My decision is that I will try to go through some of this caching stuff, like writing caching to C stuff, a little slower and do more coverage of that and go through it quicker in the 12:30 and say, hey, there's more exercises you can find in the 9:30 report, basically. As many people have noticed, the midterm is graded. I'd like to have regrades, et cetera, submitted by the Monday after break. We'll probably consider ones after that, but nice to have it consolidated. The actual mapping to final scores in this class for the policy page is something I will take the raw scores without adjustments and decide that at the end of the semester, trying to take into account how hard quizzes, exams actually work. I'm not going to do an adjustment for each exam and for each quiz, you know, separately about how to do that. I am deliberately not calling this adjustment a curve, because a curve is when someone decides in advance that something like 20% of people are going to get A's. That's not what I'm doing. I'm looking at, does this performance match for an A, the department's policy that this represents, you know, competence in all course learning objectives? That's what I'll be looking at the end of the semester, looking at what did a typical student in this score range actually do, what do they have problems with? Does that match what I think should be an A, and where should I put the line if it's not 90? It should be lower than 90 for an A minus, I should say. But I'm not saying that because I know people always think there should be want us to not use the raw exam scores there. The idea is we're doing that adjustment at the end of the semester. I've in the past done adjustments earlier when I've taught classes with multiple midterms, I prefer, you know, saving that effort to the end of the semester, and I think it has basically the same effect. Questions on logistics. I should have written this down. There are people taking the midterm. There are a surprising number of people who need to take the midterm late, so please keep that in mind when discussing it. We probably will change it a bit for them, but still, please keep that in mind when discussing it. Also, please stay healthy. A lot of people apparently are not staying healthy. Okay. So, this time we showed these formulas. So, mentioned our set associated caches were the big difference was that we had this number of blocks per set, number of ways that kind of influences our cache size, but otherwise, as far as tag index offset stuff, you know, it's basically the same. And I'd like to point out we have our LRU kind of information, and I want to emphasize, since a lot of people miss this, that this is updated, can be updated on hits and misses. So here I have a miss, I put something in here, and now the least recently used way is in that in index zero is way zero because we just accessed way one. And I'll label this is way zero, way one. And on these hits, that doesn't change, but if we access zero here, meaning that we just, for this access, we just accessed this block, that changes our LRU information because we need to remember that, well, if I want to put something in index zero, it better be replacing the 6.0 and 6.1 because our temporal locality heuristic, the one that says if something was accessed recently it will be accessed again, says the 6061 block is more likely to be not accessed, or is less likely to be accessed. There's that positively, and the 00 is more likely to be accessed in the future. So we're going to, when we have this next access here, we're going to say replace the 6160 block. And the bookkeeping to do that, because when we do this, we don't look ahead in the future, and if you're implementing a cache, you're not gonna like keep a log like we have in this slide, is updating that LRU bit, or if we have multiple ways, like an LRU order, like a listing of set numbers, each time there's an access, you know, which potentially means that hits involve modifying the metadata in the cache. Questions on this idea? Okay, so I believe last time we finished up and we were about to do this exercise. Or we did it, just did this exercise. So let's go, we're gonna go back to our cache misses and see exercises. So here, my notion is I have a cache with one set to start out, and we're gonna change this to more than one set, where I have my array elements, and this maps to cache blocks, like so. So our one set cache can either store 0, 1 or 2, 3. And when we finished up last time, we realized that this means that here, this access pattern ends up having all misses to the array. And for these exercises, we're going to assume only accesses to the array involve the cache, just to keep things simple. If you're thinking of, well, how does the code really work? Well, we might like have some variables stored in memory, and that would complicate things. We're going to hope that they're not, to keep things simple. So we end up with a scenario where what happens is we read 0, we bring in 0 and 1. We read 2, we bring in 2 and 3. We read 1, we bring in 0 and 1, remembering that we always have our cache blocks decided by sort of making the offset bit 0, so we don't bring in 1 and 2. It's not something we can store in the cache. And then we read 3, we bring in 2 and 3. And kind of an intuition you can have for how could we have, if we weren't precisely looking at this code, have predicted that this would perform poorly versus our previous example. Here, how could we have predicted that? Well, we can think of that by thinking about our spatial locality idea. That here we have, this is excellent spatial locality because we're following the heuristic that spatial locality says we access a value, we access a nearby value. This example here, we have, this is not as good spatial locality, because when we access a value, that doesn't predict we access quite as nearby a value. So we've decreased our spatial locality, so we expect, you know, as a sort of quick guess, the cache performance to be worse. Now, to actually like figure out, is it worse in this particular case, and how much worse, we need to kind of do this kind of analysis, but this kind of heuristic is how you, like, as a practical programmer, should think about, you know, writing code that has good cache performance is that you should say, oh, well, you know, this is probably worse for the cache because we're skipping around more. Yeah.
Is it not the visual calc just because in the code you're defining it as adding a space that's not directly next to each other? Is that
Is it not as good as spatial locality because they're not as close to each other? Yes. Because remember, spatial locality says that the cache can predict what you'll access will be close to what you just accessed. And that is less true. It's still kind of true here, but it's less true in this code.
So, like, code-wise, functionally, between more of 1 and 2, like, doing the same thing, except just as kind of, not as efficient.
So they're doing the same thing. So our two examples are doing the same thing, but in a different order, and that's not as efficient? Yes. And so I guess we're not going to cover kind of did that much about optimizing for caches, but kind of a big idea in doing that is to arrange your accesses to kind of group things together to get both more spatial locality, so try to access things together that are next to each other, and more temporal locality, so try to, if you have to access something like, you know, 1,000 times, try to put those accesses all together. And sometimes this is fairly straightforward, like here it's fairly straightforward to say, well, let's go through the array in order. It's fairly straightforward to do that. Sometimes that is a lot less straightforward. So when I've taught 3330, we've done an assignment that's actually about this. And that assignment, we used the example of matrix multiplication. And for matrix multiplication, it's a lot less straightforward how to do that because you have to access things multiple times. And if you make it like, if you make it have really good temporal locality for one part of the data, that makes it bad for the other part. But, you know, in the simple cases, like, there's just a strategy which has better locality, like here. And that's going to be kind of intuitively the fastest, even if maybe not in all cases will it actually be, you know, any faster, depending on the details of the cache. But we can figure out what the best locality strategy is without thinking about the details of how the cache works. Okay, so let's do this exercise here. So instead of having a two-set cache, let's say we have a two-set cache. So here I have a direct map cache with index 0 and index 1. And again, we have the scenario where we have our array, which I should draw kind of better, our array, and we have, in this case, we have 8 elements, that are split up into kind of 4 cache blocks. So we kind of have the same kind of scenario where we can't store the whole array in the cache, but now the array is twice as big and the cache is twice as big. Question here is, how many misses do we expect for this set of axes? So I'll give you a minute to like figure that out. Check with your neighbor, see if you agree. We have 8 things that are accessed, you know, so probably it's no more than 8 misses. And a secondary question, if you figure out the number of misses, is what's in the cache when we're done? Who would like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we're gonna have, so let's count downwards. Who thinks we'll have 8 misses? 7? 6? 5? 4? 3? 2? 1? Okay, so we have big consensus on 4. Which is right. Now, as for kind of how to systematically figure this out, in this case, there's kind of a simple intuition we can say, which is that our values are divided into these 4 blocks, and the first access to each of these blocks must be a miss if the cache starts empty. And the second, and the blocks are accessed exactly twice, and the second access is immediately after the first one. So there's not any chance for the cache to get rid of that value, so it must be a hit. So that is probably the simplest way of getting the answer of 4. Now, I'm going to show you a more systematic way because, you know, that strategy kind of depended on a lot of the specifics of this access pattern, and we'd like to be able to do this more generally. And to kind of work out what's going on in the cache, you know, we'd like to say, like, how does the cache map to our array? And I'll assume that index 0 of the array maps to set index 0 of the cache. I'm assuming this arbitrarily. You'll see that, let's say this is not true, and it's facts set index 1 that maps to array 0. We'll get the same answer. We're just swapping sets 0 and 1. But everything in our analysis is going to still work. We're just going to have different labels. But just for simplicity, I'm just making one labeling of our sets, saying 0 is the one that holds 0 and 1, or 4 and 5. Those are the parts of the array that can be stored in set index 0. And if those are stored in set index 0, set index 1 of the cache can store 2 and 3, and 6 and 7. And we know, since this is a direct map cache, there's exactly one place each of these blocks can go. So that's why I'm doing that assignment. And I can just kind of exhaustively work out what the accesses do, tracking the full contents of the cache. So I've just written out what's in each set, that we have 2 sets in our direct map cache after each access. And I know that when we have a miss, we're going to put that in the set that that block belongs in. I don't have a choice to put it elsewhere. And that means, for example, here, when I read array of 4, I'm going to have to replace 0 and 1. There's no least recently used going on here because there's only one place I can put 4 and 5, that set 0. It does happen that that's the same thing we do if this was a two-way set associative cache and with an LRU policy, but that's just a coincidence. So I just work through this whole thing and, you know, just track each line. I just say, okay, what block are we accessing it? Is it in the set that it belongs in? If not, it's a miss and it replaces that. Now, this is feasible for our 2-set cache, but it seems like that this type of analysis really doesn't scale, right? If I have 4 sets, it seems like it becomes super hard to do. Well, maybe not hard, super tedious to do. There's a trick we can use here. So one thing we can take note is that what happens to each set is independent of all the other sets. So if I want to know what happens with the accesses to our blocks that map to set 0, so this one and this one, I can just look at only the axis is that map to set 0 and ignore everything else, because I know everything that maps to set 1 will never change or look at what's in set 0. So I can just count how many misses are there in set 0. And, you know, get that number. There's 2. I can do the same analysis for set 1. Find out there's 2 misses and just add them together. And often this will give us kind of an easy exact analysis for a lot of sets where, you know, if we have, say, 128 sets, often if we have a regular pattern, we'll find out, oh, well, you know, I figure out what happens for set 0, and I realize, oh, set 0 all the way up to, like, set 100, all going to have the same pattern. And I just, well, I've now solved, you know, 100 out of 128 elements of the problem. You know, and I can just do it that way. I don't need to, like, track exhaustively every axis. I can just say, oh, there's a pattern here where every set, because we're consecutive numbers or something like that, will have the same number of misses, or at least, or some number of the sets will have the same number of misses. Next questions? Yes, yeah.
I'm a bit confused. What's the purpose of the first cache block at index 1? Is that just to, like...
What's the purpose of this? So this is saying that there's memory before the array, and if it was cached, it would be stored in cache set 1. And that's just because, remember, when we map our cache, our memory to cache blocks with either a direct map or associated cache, if one block maps to index x, the next block maps to index x plus 1, x plus 2, and so on, wrapping around when we hit our total number of sets. Does that answer your question?
Sort of. So, like, if everything was, like, offset, so, like, array 0 and array 1 were in that cache block of index 1, so on and so forth, would that change the number of data cache misses?
Okay, so your question is, let's say, instead of having... So I made an assumption about how the array mapped to the cache. Let's say I changed that and edited this. So this is 0, this is 1, this is 0, this is 1. Is that your question?
Yeah.
Okay, so in that case, I can keep the same analysis by just making a label change. So the label change I'll make is this. And everything works. And this is going to be true even if we had more. This would be, I could do the same type of labeling change if we had more than 2 sets. So even though it seems like I made an assumption that index 0 went to a particular place, it doesn't affect my miscounting at all. So if you're doing this sort of problem, just like label index 0 whatever's the most convenient, and it's just a labeling change that won't change the sort of count of misses. Does that answer your question?
So just to clarify, the index of the cache block doesn't matter. It's just the order in which, like, the memory is accessed.
So the numerical value of the index doesn't matter. It's the relative indexes matter, is what I'd say. Right, it does matter for this. Well, it doesn't matter here, but in future problems, it definitely could matter that array 0 and array 4 go to the same set. Right? With this pattern, happens not to matter, but we could easily imagine it mattering. Like, for example, if I accessed array of 4 here, we'd really want to know that. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Other questions? Okay, so let's do equivalent here. So here's that second exercise where we have the worst spatial locality. So we're going to guess that this does worse. The question is, how much worse? Who would like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we have, well, so we definitely, since we had four before, who thinks we definitely have four now? Who thinks we have at least five? At least six misses, at least seven misses, at least eight misses. Okay, so most people, I guess plurality, are saying at least eight. We have some people who look very confused, so hey, we should try to talk about this. So, at least eight is kind of consistent with what we saw with the one set cache, where everything was misses. And as for solving this, we can like do our same strategy as before. I figure out how it maps to set indexes. I just arbitrarily choose to label one of the indexes as 0 and one as 1. And I just keep track of what's in each set after each access. And I do my exhaustive analysis and I find out every single access is a miss. And like before, I could have made this analysis maybe arguably simpler by doing every hit set 0. I realized the pattern for set 0 is we access 0, then 4, then 1, then 3. So we have this kind of difference, whereas before we were accessing 0, then 1, then 4, then 5 in set 0. Now we're kind of flip-flopping between our two blocks that map to set 0. And that makes every access a miss. And the same is true for set blocks. And an observation you might have is that, you know, if we were clever here, so if we had a fully associative cache and we're clever, we could have, you know, voided one of these misses, right? We have the space to do that. That's not gonna, that probably wouldn't happen in a fully associative cache. We'll talk about that later. Fully associative in this case would mean two ways. So we'd have one set that holds two values. But, our caches in general aren't, they're not gonna have the time or the ability to predict the future to take advantage of the extra storage all the time. So in this case, we could say that, if I could somehow have prioritized keeping array of one in the cache, I could have avoided this miss and done better. The problem is the cache has no way to do the bookkeeping needed to make that possible. Like, there's not the information around to tell the cache that would be useful to do. There's not the ability to store other blocks while storing that. So that won't happen, but it's not the case that if I were manually choosing how to use the cache that we would have to have every access be a miss. Use the blocks of storage for the cache. We could. It's possible, but the cache doesn't have the information to do it, doesn't have the bookkeeping to do that. It just blindly does this policy that is disappointing. So questions? Okay, so let's do this one. Who'd like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we have at least four misses? At least four. At least five? At least six? At least seven? At least eight? Okay, so we have a mix here. So I'll do first the like fully manual way. So I have my first access to array zero, that's a miss. And afterwards we have set zero contains elements zero and one. Then I have an access to array three. In that case, set zero contains element zero, one still, because this access is actually to set one, and it's going to be two and three, which map to set one in our diagram, which I probably should reproduce because we'll need it in the next step. So we have our eight elements of this array, and we're going to say that these map to set zero, the others map to set one. So then we have an access to array of six. That's a miss because we aren't storing array of six in the cache. An array of six maps to set one. So it's going to replace two and three. Array of six is part of the block 6, 7. And this means when we access set one, we have a hit because we didn't access anything else in set zero that would evict it. Then we access array of four. That's going to be a miss, and we're going to replace in set 0, 0, 1 with 4, 5. And set one remains unchanged. We access array of seven. That's going to be a hit because 6, 7 is still in set one. We access array of two. That's going to be a miss. We're going to bring back in 2, 3. So this is our case where we lost from our locality. And then we access array of five. That's going to be a hit because 4, 5 is still in set. So I end up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is, yeah. How do I know to replace step one at step three for array of six? I know that the way things map to sets is that 6 and 7 are together in a block and always map to set one. And that's sort of statically fixed based on the addresses in the array. Like it doesn't get to, we can't change it dynamically. If we want to like change that dynamically, we can't use a direct map cache, right? That's our strategy for dealing with what if the set mapping's inconvenient? Well, use more ways is our solution for that. Yeah.
If this wasn't direct map, and like it utilized LRU, if I'm understanding it correctly, would it have more misses or?
So the question is, if instead of this being a two-set cache, do I have this as an associative? No, I don't. Okay. If this was set as set associative, let's do that. Okay. So. Let's do the version of this where it's set associated. I'll do that after I explain one thing about the direct map version. But yeah, we'll just go through that. That's worth doing. Other questions? Okay, so one thing I'd like to mention is I mentioned our trick that we can just look at only the accesses to set zero and set one separately. So in this case, our accesses to set zero are for zero, and 1, 4, and 5. So I could have just looked at these four accesses here, determined, you know, and only tracked what's in set zero, and done the same for the other four accesses in set one to compute this, rather than writing kind of redundant information as I was going through. And on the inquiry of, like, let's figure out how this works for Let's just cross this out and write a fully associative cache with 8-byte blocks and an LRU policy. Let's just do that. Yeah.
So there are two ways.
There are two ways, yes. Two ways and one size. So fully associative means one size. So the number of ways is based on how many ways do you need to make there only be one size. Oh, yeah, sorry. I should say fully associative cache with 2-byte blocks and an LRU policy and two blocks. I need to specify that, sorry. But yeah, because if we have a 4-way fully associative cache, then it gets a lot easier. Let's say 2 blocks, fully associative cache. Same size as before, just it's fully associative. My bookkeeping is I'm going to write the contents of our single set in order from least recently used to most recently used to help me track what's going on. Even though in the cache, yeah, we're not going to like move things between ways because that's slow. Like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we have, let's start with, so we definitely have at least 4 misses. Who thinks we have at least 5 misses? At least 6? At least 7? At least 8? So a lot of people think that this is worse than our 2-set cache in this case. So let me go through how I would solve this. So I have, say, so I'm tracking in our cache, our first access is a miss, and now our cache contains the block with 0 and 1 and nothing else. Then we access 3. Now our cache is going to contain the block with 0 and 1 and the block with 2 and 3, and we're at capacity for that for set 0, the only set of this fully associative cache. And 0, 1 is the least recently used block. I access 6, that's going to evict 0 and 1 and replace it with the block containing 6, which is 6 and 7. Then I access 1, that's going to evict 2 and 3 and replace it with the block containing 0 and 1. I access 4. That's going to access the block containing 4 and 5. That's going to evict the least recently used block containing 6 and 7. I access 7. We unfortunately recently evicted that, so that's going to evict the block containing 0 and 1 and bring in 6 and 7. I access 2. Again, a miss that brings in the block containing 2 and 3, I access 5, also a miss. So indeed, all misses. So it's in fact worse than our 2-set cache with this particular pattern. And kind of an intuition for that is our LRU policy is meant to take advantage of temporal locality, and that's pretty bad here. So not too surprising that it didn't really help with that. Questions? Okay, so let's do exercise with a bigger cache. So let's say I have a 2 kilobyte cache with 16 byte blocks. And 2 kilobytes, in this case, I mean power of 2, so I mean 2 to the 11 bytes. And I'd like you to observe that these two values are exactly 2 to the 11 bytes apart. This one. Check me there, see if you agree. This is obviously a much trickier because we have suddenly have big numbers. Who'd like some more time? Okay, so in that case, who thinks we have 8 accesses, so we have no more than 8 misses, or 8 values accessed, you know, together. So who thinks we have at least, we'll start with at least 2 misses, at least 3 misses, at least 4 misses, at least 5 misses. Okay, at least 6 misses. So most people seem to think we have around 4. That's what I get. So let's first talk about how these maps to sets. So in our cache, we have 16 byte blocks, so that's 4 elements. So our first block, you know, we'll say that 0, 1, 2, 3 maps to set 0, then 4, 5, 6, 7 maps to set 1, and then we go all the way up, and then 5, we do the math, then 509, 508, 509, 510, 511, all map to set 5, map to the maximum set number, which in this case is 2 to the 11th divided by 2 to the 4. This is the number of total bytes divided by the size of each block. So this is the number of blocks, which is the number of sets in a direct map cache. That's going to be 11 minus 4 is 2 to the 7. So this is block 2 to the 7, also known as 127. Sorry, 2 to the 7 minus 1, also known as 127. And then we have to wrap around because we've run out of blocks in our sets in our cache. So then 512, 513, 514, 515, all mapped to set 0 again. So it turns out that all of these values are all in set 0. Because 512 is close to an appropriate power of 2, basically. So that means that we're going to have only set 0 is going to matter here. And we're going to have a miss. We're going to bring in 0, 1, 2, 3 into set 0. We're going to have a hit. Great. We're going to have a miss. We're going to replace that with 512 to 515. We're going to have a hit because that 514 is in that range. We're going to have a miss. We're going to bring back 0, 1, 2, and 3. Then we're going to have a hit because that's in that range, a miss, and a hit. Some questions about how I figured that out? Yeah.
So why is the index 511? Why is it miss if it is if 5?
Oh, I can't number things. Okay, sorry, I forgot. Of the trick I put in this exercise. So I should say here, all of these axes, so map that way. This is emit. So all of these axes map to set 0. And so this is what happens for set 0, 513. Yeah, for set 0, 0, 1, 2, 3, and then 5, 1, well, that. So that's what happens for set 0. Sorry, you're right. And then 511, because it's steeply not there here, because it's in set 127, that's a separate miss. And this is an example where we can analyze our set. And that's going to be set 127. It's initially empty, and then we bring in 508 through 511. Sorry, I forgot what I did with the exercise when I set it up semesters ago. Thank you for bringing up. So questions? Sorry, so the number we get is we have 1, 2, 3. We have 4, or I was meant to do this differently. We have 4 plus 1 for a total of 5 misses. 4 for set 0, 1 for set 127 for the 511 value that is in, you know, not this box. So questions? How this works? Okay. So how about if we change our numbers a little bit? So in this case, this one doesn't do that type of trick, but this is now not a power of 2. So we're going to say that these are all set 0, and these are, well, 500 divided by 4 tells us how many blocks we advance, and that is going to be 125, which is less than the number of sets in the cache, is less than 128, so that is actually the set number, I should just say this is mod 128 equals 125 still. And so these are all going to be in set. And the set is going to be 500 through 503, so this is going to be set 125. The block is going to be 500 through 503. So who thinks we have, let's do at least two misses. At least three misses. At least four. So most people say exactly two, that's what I get. When we bring in zero here, we bring in zero through three into set zero. And when we access 500, we bring in 500 through 503 and set 125, and those can coexist in our direct map cache, no problem. Yeah?
So, is the reason why 500 to 503 is in its own set is because everything is less than like the 512 threshold, or?
Is the reason why 500 to 503 is in the same set is because everything is less than its own threshold? So remember we assign 0 through 3 to set 0, 4 to 7 through to set 1, 8 through 11 to set 2, and so on. So when I do that assignment, when I get to 500, we're at 125. Now, if we go beyond the number of sets in the cache, we have to wrap around to 0, but that doesn't happen until 512. So, which I think is roughly what you were saying about the wraparound. But the other thing we need to keep in mind is that it's kind of important that 500 is a multiple of 4, because if it was 499, there wouldn't be a set that starts at 499, it would start at 496, because that's the multiple of 4 from where our array starts. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Yeah, back up.
Could you explain again how you determined that there was 128 sets?
How did I determine there's 128 sets? So that that is that I have 2 kilobytes, this is 2 to the 11 bytes, divided by 16 bytes a block, gives me 2 to the 7 blocks. And since this is a direct map cache, that implies 1 block per set. If this were a set associative, we'd have to do some more division. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so we saw this exercise. Let's do, say, we just say this is a two-way set associative cache. So if you remember what we did in the previous version of the exercises, all of these accesses were set 0. And this access here is set 127 in the direct map cache. Now, the set associative cache is going to change that, because the set associative cache has half the number of sets. So this is going to be set 63. Because the way our cache works is that array of 0 and array of 256 are in the same set, because we have half the number of caches. That we took a cache that looked like this, and we kind of transformed it to look like this. So it has half the number of rows with the same amount of data. Would like some more time, or? We're writing things down, so I assume things are happening. Even though, people. Okay. So let's see. Who thinks we have at least two misses? At least three? At least four? At least. Okay. So we have consensus on three, and that's what I got. So in set zero, we now have a two-way cache, so the set can store two blocks. Our access to array of zero is going to be a miss. And in set zero, we're going to have then, we're going to have zero through three as our stored as a block. Access to two is going to be a hit from that block. And then we're going to have a miss for accessing 512. And the block containing 512 starts at address 512. That's the multiple of the block size. So we end up with our cache now storing 512 through 515 indices, and that's the most recently used after we just have accessed 512. Then we accessed 514, it's still the most recently used. Then we accessed 5, then we accessed 1, that's also a hit. And if we're doing our bookkeeping, you know, we're going to say that now 0 through 3 is the most recently used, and 512 through 515 are the least recently used. So if we access something new, 512 through 515 would now be the thing to event from set 0. Then we access array of 3. That's another hit. And I'm only looking at the accesses for set 0 right now. So then we access array of 513. That's another hit, and that's going to sort of flip our bookkeeping back to say that 0 through 3 would be the next thing we get rid of from the cache if we access something new in set 0. So questions on how I did that tracking? Yes?
So because 511 is in set 63 and therefore not like subject to the LRU, MRU stuff that's happening in set 0, that's where the third miss comes from?
That question is the 511 where the third miss comes from? Yes. So I'm doing the thing where I separately analyze each set. So when I analyze set 63, I'm going to say, okay, this access is a miss, and set 63 has our two set block, two blocks, sorry. And one of them is going to have, after that miss, have that block stored. The block with 5808 through 511 inclusive.
So in situations like this where different like XY set associated caches, each set has its own LRU MRU hierarchy?
Question, each set has its own LRU MRU information? Yep. And it's tracked independently for each set. So let's do this one. So here we have accesses that are exactly, this is 256 elements, so this is 256 times 4 equals 1024 or 2 to the 10 bytes apart, which is equal to 2 to the 10 minus 4, 2 to the 6 cache blocks apart. And the same is true for each of these, or space 2 to the 6 cache blocks apart. And not coincidentally, it happens that our cache here, we have 2 to the 11 bytes total divided by 2 to the 4 bytes per block. So we have 2 to the 7 blocks divided by 2 ways, because that's how many ways we have. So we have 2 to the 6 sets. So these are exactly the number of cache blocks apart is equal to the number of sets in this cache, which means that, as is mentioned here, those elements all map to the same set. So who'd like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we have at least four misses? At least five misses? At least six misses? At least seven misses? At least eight misses? So we have a plurality with the answer I got, which is that we have eight misses. That even though we have two ways, it ends up not helping us here, because this pattern has such bad temporal locality, right? Bad locality, like we're accessing the same block over and over again, like we have a chance for a hit between 0 and 1 and 256 and 257, because those are in the same block. But the problem is that by the time we've accessed array of 1, the most recent accesses to the set are, you know, we'll have evicted the array of 0 through array of 3 cache block. So yeah, this ends up being an all miss pattern. Even though we have a two-way cache, we need to go all the way up to four ways to handle this sort of number of conflicts. And yeah, with our cache. Questions? And this is a very contrived situation, but let me show you the non-contrived thing that's like it. So here I have two arrays, and I'm computing a dot product of them. How many cache misses do I have if this is a direct map cache? And this is a case where there's a best case and a worst case. So we're, oh, so can someone volunteer? What do you think the best case is? Any volunteers for the best case? Yeah.
Would the best case just be if the array one item, like, if the array one items are in like set 0 and the array two items are in set 1 or index set 0 and index 1 set.
Okay, so the arrays are offset such that the same thing in array 0 and 1 are always in different sets? Yes, that is our best case. In that case, there won't be conflicts between the two. And our worst case is the opposite of that. They're always in the same set, where we have this kind of scenario, but with the two arrays. And this, I think, gives you an intuition for why almost no current processors have a direct map cache. Because you could imagine this sort of thing happening by accident. Wow, suddenly your performance is horrible for something that shouldn't be. So that's So I think that's where we'll probably finish up this topic, since I'm out of time, and I even have more cash myths exercises because I used to do a lot more of this in 3330. So our next big topic for caches is going to be about writes. If the value isn't, what do we do when someone's writing and we have a cached value? And there's kind of two decisions we're going to talk about. One is, if the value isn't in the cache, what do we do? Do we add it to the cache or not? And you might think, based on what we do with reads, we'd always add it. This is not always the decision processors make. The other question is, if the value is in the cache, when do we update memory? And there are caches which make kind of both of the options here. The one option is right away. The other option is you defer the update kind of as long as you can get away with. So that's the main topic we'll talk about next time, at which point we'll hopefully be synced with the other class. And, you know, it's obviously a big missing piece to make caches actually useful. So we need to deal with it right now. Okay, so that's where I'll finish up today.